This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
A similar remarkable gold mine of programming will go to the school of your choice. They will get that briefcase as well.
To them in their lives and the lessons that they can take from this wonderful struggle of the farm workers movement with the leadership of Cesar Chavez. So I'm also very happy that the archives have included my interviews also. And again, that is so important, especially for our young women, because they need to know that women can also be out there in the leadership of these struggles. I am so happy and thank you for doing this. This is such a great contribution that you are making, a gift to our society and to our history, and especially to our children. Thank you very much. Si se puede.
The Campus Campaign 2.0 is very simple. You donate once, but you give twice. When you make a contribution to the archives today, a duplicate of your selected gift will be sent to a school or college of your choice. So you get two for one, one for you and one for the school. Last year, you and the listeners raised $156,000 in one day and sponsored 783 schools nationwide. This year, we have 2 days, and our goal is $280,000 and 1,500 new schools sponsored. Call this number, 1-800-735-0230. That's toll-free, 1-800-735-0230. You can donate online by going to supportpra.org. And now we return to the Campus Campaign 2.0 National Pacifica broadcast.
Dear Pacifica Radio Archives, Bernard Fradkin, Dean of Library and Learning Resources, informed me of your organization's thoughtful gift for our Digital Library and Learning Resource Center at Riverside City College. What a wonderful addition to the library. It is the commitment and partnership of friends like you that contributes to the continued success of the college. Please know that your gift is enthusiastically accepted and will certainly be an asset to our students. Again, thank you for your generosity. Nancy, Assistant Director, Riverside Community College District.
This is Noam Chomsky. I'm pleased to be with you and also very pleased to be able to express my enthusiasm and strong support for the Archives campaign, which is bringing to colleges the very rich archives of Pacifica for the past 60 years. It's sure to be an invaluable resource.
Hello, yes, this is Brother Cornell West, and I am here to do all that I can to support the campus campaign of my dear brothers and sisters at Pacifica. Students, faculty, teachers need to get in on this magnificent project and program. I'm doing all that I can. I'm behind it 120%. It is what we need in these times.
Hi, this is Dan Ellsberg, encouraging you to support the Pacifica Radio Archives, which contains 60 years of social history of the United States that doesn't exist anywhere else. By supporting the Pacifica Radio Archives campus campaign, you can help put these priceless resource materials in campus libraries and classrooms throughout America.
Hi, I'm Gail Zappa, friend and supporter of the Pacifica Radio Archives, where you can hear the voice and music of people like Maya Angelou, Duke Ellington, and my husband Frank Zappa.
The only way that a person could buy into their argument is if they had gone through 12 years of an American education. Anybody who comes out of the school system could be just numb enough to think that these guys had some merit in their argument when they're wrong. They're varmints.
We are so lucky to have people that give their time and their energy to preserving the tapes made by these really grand masters in the truest sense of the word.
This is Moctezuma Esparza, the host of La Raza Nueva at KPFK from 1968 to 1975. These resources, these extraordinary recordings, these moments that have captured the heroes of the civil rights movement in their own voice are a national treasure. And this treasure needs to be shared. And I believe that it is a public service of immense value, one that we should all support, that we should all do all we can so that every child all of the people, all of humanity that is represented in our country and in the rest of the world have a right to have access to these materials.
That was Montezuma Esparza speaking for the Pacifica Radio Archives. And welcome. It's the 7 o'clock hour here on the West Coast. On the East Coast, it is 10. Yes, that is right, Brian DeShazer. 10:05 on the East Coast and 9:05 there in Houston, Texas. This is the Pacifica Radio Archives annual fund drive, National Marathon Fund Drive Preservation and Access Broadcast. That's it. I'm Brian DeShazer, the director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. We started at 4 a.m. Pacific time today, and we have been receiving your calls, the listeners, all day long, donating and sponsoring schools. It's been a fantastic day. We really appreciate those who have listened and joined the Campus Campaign 2.0, which is the program that the Pacifica Radio Archives initiated last year by taking restored materials that had been put into From the Vault episodes, the Pacifica Radio Archives weekly public radio series heard nationwide on Pacifica Radio and its affiliates. And these collections were gathered and put into a 9-disc MP3 format. In each disc, there's 10 hours. 9 discs, math. 90 hours in the Campus Campaign Volume 1 last year was sent to over 783 schools sponsored by you, and you, the listeners, received a copy as well. So this is how the Campus Campaign works. When you call and donate and pledge your support for the Pacifica Radio Archives, you can choose from one of any of the educational subjects we are offering and compiled for $75 pledge. You can get 10 hours of the Civil Rights Movement of Cornel West, Odetta, Blues Legacy, etc. U.S. history, the counter history of the United States as told by KPFA producers back in 1977, I think, or 71. Arts and Literature, The Ballad of Pete Seeger. Plenty to be had. 800-735-0230 is the number to call to make a donation to the Pacifica Radio Archives. With your credit card, we can get you your gift by the holidays, and your sponsored school will receive their gift by February. So this is the LGBT Hour here in Los Angeles. IMRU is the regular broadcast, and I believe it's in Houston, Texas at KPFT, which also has a Queer Voices program. New York, WBAI, has Out FM. KPFA also has a gay and lesbian program, and I am sorry it escaped me for the moment. So the Pacifica Network has always told the story of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgendered as early as 1958, the very first known broadcast of a self-identified homosexual on public airwaves was on Pacifica Radio in 1958 on KPFA there in Berkeley, interviewed by Elsa Knight Thompson, a gentleman from the Mattachine Society. Well, today we are going to be listening to that gay history as told by Pacifica and from the past and to the future here today. And this is all part of the Campus Campaign, the LGBT Academic Studies Project that we did this summer with a collaboration with New York University, UC Berkeley Moffitt Library. We had two interns, Joe and Emily, who came out to the archives and did an academic project selecting and identifying the most significant recordings in gay and lesbian history that are in these archives. They digitized them, and they are available for free online at the UC Berkeley Social Activism Recording Project, something like that. Anyway, online you can search Gay and Lesbian History, UC Berkeley Moffitt Library, and I'm sure you'll find it. But for now, we're including it in a gift. Campus Campaign Volume 2 includes the LGBT Studies Pack, and it includes the 1979 March on Washington for Gay and Lesbian Rights, an hour documentary on the memorial for Quentin Crisp, Christopher Isherwood. He actually wrote a radio play and broadcast it here on KPFK in 1966. We have that play. The Gay Movement, a documentary from 1969 to 1979. Gay Day 2009, the Harvey Milk story, a documentary about bisexuality. The Lesbian Experience with Tori Osborne, which includes readings from Emma Goldman, poetry of Audre Lorde. 1-800-735-0230. You, the LGBT listening audience, and you, the LGBTQ sympathetic audience, understand that the voices of the queer queer community on Pacific Radio are as vital as our lives. And you will hear that in what we're going to now, which is our first clip of the hour. This in 1979, 30 years ago this year, the Pacifica Radio Archives, KPFK, they did Gay Day broadcasts, an incredibly inventive, creative move for a radio network that preempted regular programming and dedicated the whole day to what it was like to be gay and lesbian in 1979. We're going to hear how our queer producers expressed themselves on Gay Day 1979. Get a sense of your history, our history. Gays and lesbian, the gay and lesbian movement today is as strong as ever, and these are the shoulders that we stand on. And with your donation to the Pacifica Radio Archives for as little as $75 or $200, you can receive the LGBT new, brand new selection compilation and a whole bunch of other stuff, Native American studies, Latino Chicano studies, a science pack, great voices on the radio. Hi, Harrison. Welcome. We're going to go to a clip, and then I'm going to introduce you, okay? So let's hear 1979 Gay Day broadcast here on Pacifica Radio. Please don't forget to call 800-735-0230.
Gay Day.
You know what we're really fighting for? That's just to be left alone. Just the right to make a living. Just the right to live where we want to. Just the right to associate with other individuals, just as every other American citizen wishes to do.
State Senator John Briggs has just conceded the...
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White. Has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter in the shooting deaths of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk last November 27th.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
And that was a little sense of 1979. That music really was quite gay. 1979, Gay Day here on KPFK. That does give you a sense of what it was like, right? Harvey Milk, who was reporting on that at the time before Harvey Milk was an actual public service person?
PSP, as we call it business.
You know, Pacifica KPFA interviewed Harvey Milk in his photography studios, and we're going to hear a little bit of that from that later on in the program. Carrie Harrison, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming back. Well, you're welcome. I was at an electronics store, which is to me like Disneyland. I know, you'd rather be in a clothing store. Not me, baby. Give me 100 aisles of that. But I'll tell you what's really interesting is I was listening to you on the way, feeling very guilty that I was going to be 1.5 minutes late, which turned out to be 5, but that's okay. It's gay time, right? And we've learned a little bit about that. This is so extraordinary and such a treat. Where else really can you be you on the air? And that's probably one of the universal standards that Pacifica has always had. Rosa Parks got to be Rosa Parks during the interview. Nobody had to be something else for the sake of the network standards or nonsense or BS being perpetrated.
Right. Actually, that is one of the things that, you know, as I am passionate about the archives and as I sort of talk about the archives wherever I go, one of the common denominators is that these recordings are unmediated. Nobody told James Baldwin, don't talk about Alabama when you go in there. Nobody told Paul Robeson, be careful of what you might say. That was not the way the movement happened on Pacifica.
Or Noam Chomsky. Nobody will say anything to Noam Chomsky.
You know, they always push the envelope. Allen Ginsberg, queer poet, the queer poet of the century, 20th century, recited Howl
on KPFA, and it became an FCC issue, mm-hmm. as it became a legal issue for publishing for Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who we also have in the archives quite extensively. Think about Berkeley, KPFA in that area, and the history of the gay movement in San Francisco, and you've got the power of KPFA. Think about Stonewall, WBAI out there in New York. I know you're out there. You know, KPFK, KPFA, WBAI have been around since 1949, 1959, and have covered the gay movement from the very beginning, from before it actually was called a movement.
Right.
1-800-735-0230. Again, with your pledge to the Pacifica Radio Archives today, it's the campus campaign, and all of our gifts are duplicated. You get one, and when you name it school or a college, we're going to send the duplicate copy of your gift to that school, probably the librarian, unless there's somebody that you want to specifically send it to. If you want a teacher, if you want it to send it to somebody in someone's name, you can do that. How about in your own name, if it's your alma mater? 1-800-735-0230. For $75 pledge, you can receive 10 hours of the LGBT movement history on a CD, which is MP3 format. For $75, you'll get it. You and your loved one, your partner, your husband, wife, if you're here in California, or in Maine, Vermont, wherever. Or if it's just you and your partner that want to listen to the history that you know is yours. Or if you have a child that is coming out, maybe it's time that you share with them what their history is. We've talked about that a lot in terms of coming out for gays and lesbians and how hard it is to connect with that history.
Right, and also to acknowledge the phalanx of straight people who for decades have shown up alongside gay people, the way white people showed up along the side of blacks, the way men have shown up for women and women for men in this endless human struggle. And for any of us who is listening to KPFK and or WBAI or anywhere in the reaching tentacles of the Pacifica family, you own this place. Make no mistake, this is such an extraordinary broadcasting property because you're not just some, you know, listener. That's it. Off the air. Goodbye. No, you own this. These are your audio archives. You have been participatory since day one in keeping these things alive. And now today, tonight, we get to present these things and make sure that they become for the first time ever in so many different schools in front of ears of people who for whom this would have been forbidden audio. Even up to 1 year ago, and still will be in parts of Mississippi or Missouri or other places. I was just down in Florida for a couple of weeks. I went to a Klan rally. Like, in California, you say Klan rally. They say, what is it, the McCutcheons? No, Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. This stuff still goes on. And had I had CDs to hurl out like frisbees here and there, I would have, because we really need to saturate places and wake people up to get that this is Hotel Earth and everyone gets a room.
Right. Well, let's talk about strategy for a moment. We want young people in high school who are struggling with their sexuality to have access to their history. And sometimes it's even difficult for those people who are online. They don't want their parents to know that they're searching out for that information, perhaps. They're embarrassed to go to the library. Within this pack, the gay and lesbian history that's within the campus campaign is there.
Right.
We have the power to send that pack to a high school in Alabama where it might be, this might be the pack that somebody can get to easily and that have that connection. 1-800-735-0230. With your pledge of $75, you can get the LGBT pack and name a school. If you don't know of a school, let us pick one out for you. We'll find one. We have people suggesting schools but don't have the money. We can match you up with somebody. We can match you with the school if you want. If you know of a state that you think the struggle is just too much for some people, let's donate there. North Carolina, Mississippi, South Carolina.
Yeah, or where did you know?
Florida, that's fine. 1-800-735-0230. You can also go online at supportpra.org and donate online and look at the details of all the premium gifts that we are offering today.
Yeah, the reason we're banging out 1-800-735-0230, 1-800-735-0230, is because it's really critical that this get out. I grew up at a place called Lake Forest, north of Chicago. show, which bred little wasps. That's what we were supposed to do, all become little George Bushes, and all end up like our fathers at Yale, and all do the usual dance of several hundred years. And you know what? That pulse has been severed a little bit. I'm one of the guys that got out, but a whole lot of my people that are my age, my classmates, I don't even talk to them. I'd love to be able to, but we are operating on a different frequency. They're still using charcoal, and we're using, you know, oil colors here at Pacifica. And this is really important, and only because of audio like this, only because of endless, unmitigated, open, free access to the extraordinary voices of history, like a Harvey Milk. Let's talk about heroes. It's not John Wayne. Look how many Indians he killed. That's heroic. How about a guy like Harvey Milk saying, I am what I am, and I want to do the right thing? That's an American hero for sure.
Right. And you know, and I think it's also important to not only send the history to those schools and history to those high schools where people might need that access, but what about today? What about the movement here in California to share with other states that don't have that movement yet, the gay marriage, the Prop 8? If you're out there in other states where you're not familiar with Prop 8, it's happening. Gay marriage, same-sex marriage is happening in states all over our country. The times are a-changing. And I want to share with you something that we did this past June for Gay Pride here in Los Angeles and up in San Francisco. The Pacifica Network collaborated with us here in the archives. And we also collaborated with StoryCorps, who works with NPR Oral Histories. And they came to us. I went to them. And we collaborated. And we said, why don't we do an LGBT StoryCorps? What does that sound like? What would it be like to document now the couples who have the privilege of having marriage? What would that do? 1-800-735-0230. This is a StoryCorps project that collaborated with the Pacifica Radio Archives. This can be yours along with 90 hours of archives material for your pledge of $200 that will be duplicated and sent to a school of your choice when you call 1-800-735-0230. We have four callers on the line. Plenty of callers, volunteers are waiting for your call. There's another call. Thank you very much. And let's listen to a few minutes of StoryCorps.
My name is Janine Weller. I am 56 years old, and today's date is June 1st, 2009. We are at the KPFA studios in Berkeley, and I'm here with Rebecca Chikoris, my dearest friend.
My name's Rebecca Chikoris. I'm 58 years old. It's June 1st, 2009. I'm at KPFA radio station in Berkeley, and I'm here with my dearest friend, Janine Weller. When I was just out of high school, I'd just graduated. In order to sort of acclimate myself to the adult world, I began taking Time and Newsweek magazines, and I would read adult issues. I would read what was going on in government and politics and blah, blah, blah. There was a little article in Time magazine about the Stonewall riots, and then I remember seeing news footage of it on television. And in my parents' home, my first overt expression of who I was just a tiny one. I cut that article out of Time magazine. It was probably 3 column inches at the most, and I taped it up over my desk where I did my homework as a child in my bedroom. And one day we were having some sort of backyard barbecue, Memorial Day or something, and the neighbors were over, and somehow this fellow who was my neighbor and whose kids I babysat for was standing in my bedroom talking to me. I guess I was painting a picture or something. He came in to look at it, offer a compliment. And he saw that, and he asked me about Stonewall. And I said, well, I think people should be free to be who they are. And he said, it's fine for people to be who they are unless they're child molesters. And then he launched into this riff about, you know, the usual about recruiting children, molesting children, just living a depraved life of appetites uncontrolled and uncontrollable. And I knew that wasn't me, and I wondered if that was those people. And you know that, and then I thought, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And that was just a terrifically liberating moment for me, because you know, these were all the adults, these are all the people that I obeyed, who told me I could have the car, not have the car, I could go out, I couldn't go out, you know, whatever. This was the normative operating culture, and I just remember thinking, he does not know what he's talking about. I don't have to listen to him.
For me, it was right after I came out, I wanted to read everything there was to read about gay history, gay life, this, that, and the other thing. So I went down to the Castro and got a bunch of books, and there was, I guess, a now classic book called Stone Butch Blues about a woman who very much not only dressed like a man but considered having what's now known as sort of transgender operations, or I don't think she ever did. But in any case, she was at Stonewall, which was in New York, and my recollection is it was a police raid on a bar.
Right.
They hauled everyone off the jail for really what...
The
really
Queens fought back.
Yeah, the Queens fought back. And I was fascinated by it, angered by it, didn't quite know how my idea of being a lesbian fit into this. And for me, that was the struggle, the beginning of a struggle of saying, I know I'm gay, you know, I know I really love this and I want to be a lesbian, but I don't want to look like a man, and I don't,
and where do I
fit in here?
The first time I went into a lesbian bar, I was so appalled by what I saw.
I was petrified.
It scared the living hell out of me. I just turned around and ran.
I did the same thing.
And it wasn't so much that they looked like men, they were wearing leisure suits, and I thought, oh my God, if this means that I have to wear leisure suits the rest of my adult life, I think that I'm going to have to jump off a cliff or something. Fortunately, fashion evolved. I've never worn a leisure suit.
25 minutes past the hour here on the Pacifica Radio Network. We are doing our national fund drive for the Pacifica Radio Archives. Extraordinary, unique audio such as that. We're going to be hearing from Harvey Milk in just a moment. This is stuff that is not sitting in the Library of Congress. This is stuff not available at Borders. This is not sitting on some LP out there waiting to be fired up. It exists nowhere but here. Brian DeShazer, who's sitting next to me, Carrie Harrison with you, by the way. Brian is the director of the archives. He sits up there staring, touching delicately these reel-to-reel tapes covered in dust, saying, oh my God, don't wiggle too much to the left, it could degrade in front of my eyes. That's what we're dealing with. This is the only history that exists for an entire group of humans going back to Alexander the Great, the first recorded Nancy boy who conquered Earth. I mean, we come from a rich background of people. And remember, just because we know it's a biological imperative to be who we are, some people think it's a bad choice. Like you woke up on a Thursday and went, yeah, I think I'll be gay today. I don't think so. But this is half of the American public who still isn't quite sure who and what we are. These are the only records of how we came about.
Right. And remember, the Pacifica always pushes the envelope of compassion, civil rights, black power, LGBT issues, the Latino Chicano movement. Compassion is what Pacifica is about. It's based on pacifism, not because we're on the Pacific coast.
Right.
1-800-735-0230. Pacifica has been for you, the LGBT community, and our sympathetic straight allies. We love you. 1-800-735-0230. This and all those movements can be part of another generation's mindset. Another generation's of hardwiring is what we want to do. We don't want to just pass it over their brain. We want it inside their brain. How does this intrinsically change the way we think and feel and react to the world around us? This is what it's about here on Pacifica, and here on the Pacifica Radio Archives is taking our history out of the vault and not onto the radio, but into the classroom, into the libraries, where they can have access to the voices of Gore Vidal, Jessica Mitford, Dylan Thomas, June Jordan, Edward Said, Stokely Carmichael, Cesar Chavez, Mario Savio, Norman Mailer, Angela Davis, Miley Ivins, in of course Quentin Chris Castaneda. Carlos Castaneda is from the Latino Chicano Studies Pack, not the LGBT Pack.
And the Ooga Booga.
Yes, a bit controversial, but you know, this is an interview from 1968 when he wrote his most important book. So it's good information, and it's always good to explore the controversial thinkers of our times, because that's actually how we move forward in the world.
And if you call 1-800-735-0230, not only will we love you, not only will we support you, but you will be supporting the other humans on Earth. Otherwise, you and I are stuck with the official history, which is George Washington rode the Potomac, Abe Lincoln never told a lie, and that's about all you need to know. And the rest of it is whatever's on Anderson Cooper.
Right. We're going to go and listen to Harvey Milk now. Lucia Chappelle, who is actually in the hospital getting a back surgery. We're shouting out to Lucia Chappelle, one of the longtime LGBT producers here at Pacifica Radio. And we shout out to her. As she brought the gay history to Pacifica. And so we're going to listen to Harvey Milk. She produced it for our Gay Day broadcast in June. Let's listen to Harvey Milk.
Harvey, do you have a few words for KPFA?
Yeah, come on out. Join us. Bring a friend.
What do you think about the turnout so far?
Well, it's never enough. Never enough. Never enough.
Milk became well known during the recent campaign when he often debated Senator John Briggs, author of the Anti-Gay Teacher Initiative.
To the people who voted yes, listen carefully. Meet us. Talk to us. Find out about us. Sit down with us when there's no pressure of an election. Sit down when there's no hysteria. Invite us to your meetings, to your clubs, to your homes. Find out that indeed we are not what you thought.
The joke was going to be, I think we should march on Washington. We'll set up tents. We know how gay men love camping. Well, it got such a huge applause, I think we should march on Washington, that I said, well, I'm not going to do the rest of the joke. It's got this applause. And then Harvey picked it up in San Francisco.
I called for that march on the day of freedom in Washington, D.C., on the same spot where over a decade ago, Dr. Martin Luther King said, I have a dream.
This is four people who stood for human rights and were assassinated. Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, and Harvey Milk, the supervisor of San Francisco who was shot last year.
All you downtrodden people, always bear the brunt. Just sit back.
And that is part one of the Harvey Milk story. You know, we have to jump fast forward to the end of the Harvey Milk story. Unfortunately, it did happen. And this is how Pacifica covered the end of the story.
Tuesday night, the tone was remarkably different on Castro Street. The long-planned celebration to commemorate Harvey Milk's birthday came off as planned, without violence.
Introducing Harry Britt.
Tonight, 15,000 people have gathered to demonstrate with their love that the spirit of Harvey Milk will always be alive in our city. And I sure as hell don't have to tell you that Harvey Milk's people do not have a damn thing to apologize to anybody for ever. Yesterday was a tough one. But as I've talked to so many of you today and received so many wonderful calls from you and from gay people and from non-gay people all over the United States, it seems to me that somehow we turned a corner yesterday, and that if Harvey Milk is listening somewhere, he knows that the gay movement has moved forward a great step because of what happened yesterday. Let no one believe that the step that we have taken is a step from nonviolence to violence. We have suffered too much at the hands of violent people ever to go down that road. But let us say that never again will our people ever stand by and let Dan White's people rule the day. Let us say with our new strength that we are tired of dealing with pigs, and that from now on, The people who would follow the spirit of Dan White are going to have to deal with us.
Tonight, there is a much different tone to this crowd from last night, and I like it a lot better.
Sally Gerhart.
Harvey, there's no way that I'll apologize for what happened in this city of yours last night. You've always known...
And we don't apologize either here at Pacifica. It is Free Speech Radio Airwaves. We are here on the Pacifica Radio Archives National Marathon Fun Drive broadcast here on Pacifica. And this is the LGBT Hour. Please don't forget the number, 1-800-735-0230. That's toll free, 1-800-735-0230. With your pledge of $75, you there out there, the queer audience, you can get 10 hours of gay history, and you can also sponsor a school. And we will send a duplicate copy to that school. If you want to go to the $200 level, it'll give you the 10 hours of LGBT history and civil rights, 10 hours, Odetta, Cornel West, Dick Gregory, W.E.B. Du Bois, George Jackson, The Confessions of Nat Turner with Ossie Davis, James Baldwin, William Styron, Arts and Literature, The Village Gate, Concerts with Dizzy Gillespie, McCoy Tyner, a documentary about Shakespeare, The Ballad of Pete Seeger, The Beat Poets of San Francisco, which includes queer poet Allen Ginsberg reading Howl, Lawrence Ferlinghetti reading Coney Island of the Mind, Lillian Hellman reading her letter to HUAC. They remember Dvorak, people who actually worked with Dvorak here on Pacifica Radio. $200 pledge, 1-800-735-0230. And in the studios, we have our IMRU production team, Taryn, Harrison, you're with us. Trevor, you're here at the archives. Rita Gonzalez is walking in. Steve Pride is walking in. This Pacifica Radio is KPFK's longtime running LGBT program called IMRU. IMRU. That's the joke. And it has been on the air for some 35 years. Is that right? Is there a number yet, Steve Pride?
When gay years, it's 120.
There you go. That's what I wanted you here for, Steve. You have the most wonderful humor. 35? Wait. Okay. So here we are.
1974.
Rita Gonzalez, you've also been one of the producers of IMRU for many years.
Since 1986, actually.
Cool. So. And Taryn, you're one of the newer producers.
Oh, 96. What
yes.
did I say? 86,
yeah. Well, 1986. You gave yourself 10 more years. You're not that old. You can't.
So it's a group. We're here as a group, and we're here because we're shouting out on Pacifica Radio on all five stations, New York, Washington, D.C., Berkeley, California, and here in Los Angeles and in Houston, Texas. And it is the Gay Hour. This is our history, ladies and gentlemen. And we want Rita and Steve, say a moment about the Harvey Milk story, that whole experience and the movement, how we went from Harvey Milk to where we are now. What has it meant to you to be here on these Free Speech Radio airwaves and have our history so well taken care of, and now we're here giving it to the schools?
Wow, that's...
It's exciting.
It is very exciting.
Our show has been so excited by working with the archives and some of the stories you've given us from the archives, with Truman Capote reading from Breakfast with Tiffany's, or... what else have we here on?
James Baldwin, Audrey Lorde,
Alice Walker.
And some of the shows, because not too long ago, we were going through some of the archives and listening to some of the things, like with Harvey Milk, some of the issues that they went through, we're still going through today. So it's amazing. We have come a long way, but... And how we're dealing with the issues are just a little bit different, but we're still fighting the fight, the good fight.
And I was listening just this morning to one of the roundtable discussions from 1958, I believe, about homosexuality. I was like, wow, what history.
Right, and that's when, I think, in the 1958 broadcast, they said members of the Mattachine Society, which is basically how you join being gay by getting the little pamphlet, they said there were 100 and some members nationwide. That was 1958. This is 51 years later, and look at us now. There's seven of us in the room. Trevor Eister, who's a new member of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Homosexual.
New member of the Pacifica Radio Archives. Social network team, our Facebook boy, facebook.com/campuscampaign. That's Trevor. And, you know, it really is amazing that we have men and women, LGBT. We were early on the air earlier with a woman from the feminist majority and a black man and a gay man talking about feminism. You know, Rita, you remember that there was a day when the feminist ideal would never let a man on the air. with them.
That's true.
But we would have been kicked out of the room. But this is what Pacific is about, and how this history is about building compassion and a real community.
And it's such a community. And Taryn's a good example. I mean, Taryn is one of the newest members of IMRU who comes from a little younger generation, and some of the things that they're going through also, the younger generation, because some of us have been around for a long time. I mean, sometimes we forget. And we have to make sure that we include everyone. And I'm sure you learned from some of our archives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it allows you to gain a certain perspective, because I think that particularly my generation, there's a great sense of, what do I want to say, diversity in people's experience. You know, there are a lot of people in my generation who still experience, you know, the struggle to what it is to be identifying as an LGBT person. And then there are people like me who was incredibly blessed to be in a family that things like, you know, racial equality or equality and acceptance for your sexuality or whatever, your political views, it was so commonplace that it wasn't even a concept. You know, I didn't understand the concepts of civil rights until I was much, much older, because it seemed so obvious to me. You know, growing up as a child, it was sort of like, well, yeah. Wait, you mean you had to fight for this? Why? That's so bizarre. You know, so I came from that kind of a background that it was so ingrained in me from such a young age that to learn that people had to fight for it was a very eye-opening experience. And yet I know other people of my generation who had the exact opposite experience. That for them, you know, to a certain extent, they feel as though no progress has been made, you know, throughout history. So that's a very interesting thing to learn about.
Trevor Eister, you've just been with the Archives just a week or so preparing for this Archives Fun Drive Day, and you've been really the person closest to experiencing these audio recordings firsthand for the first time. What is, like, how have you really absorbed these recordings from Ginsburg to some of the other things you've been listening to?
I think the best way I can do it is through a visualization. Sitting up there in the archives room is really quite moving. If you're not driving, close your eyes for a minute and picture entering a refrigerated, vaulted room that has boxes upon boxes upon boxes, with all you can see is serial numbers, because there's so many packed so tight that you can't even reference them by what they are. You have to look them up. And you walk into this room and you're chilled. And I was kind of chilled by the realization that every single one of these tapes stacked so tightly on the shelves was something I didn't know about. Something I didn't know about that others need to know about. It's been really eye-opening, and I wish we could show more pictures of the archives, and maybe I'll do that on Facebook, so people can really see what's there, what Harrison was talking about. It doesn't exist anywhere else. This is where it exists, and we need to get this out to the masses.
Great. Thanks, Trevor. Harrison?
Here.
Yep. 1-800-7... You forgot your job. 1-800-735-0230. Thank you very much for everybody for joining us. I want to let Rita and Steve get another little word in, because I want to go to a little clip of what I think expresses how the movement has come. Ben and Jessica.
I was about to say that.
Can we hear Ben and Jessica?
That was my favorite piece of all time on this station.
It's one of the best pieces of radio I ever heard. We're going to listen to Ben and Jessica for a minute, telling their story, and we're going to come back in and tell you about the premium gifts. And please, there's only one caller on the line. A lot of volunteers in there waiting for you to call 1-800-735-0230.
Can I throw in a quick idea
yes,
here?
Yes, please.
I have no plan to replicate, reproduce, spawn new humans into the world. I leave that up to my 7 billion other humans. So what I would like to do, and this is one of the ways that we can perpetuate ourselves, by giving the gift of this, this is an extension of us in perpetuity. You get this CD, you hand it out, you offer it to a school. These go to all these children. They become your children through knowledge. You get to spread your seed, for lack of a more delightful metaphor, in ways so grand, so massive, it's unbelievable. Simply by calling 1-800-735-0230, 1-800-735-0230. Imagine 300 million Americans, if tomorrow morning they could wake up and have access to all these things that actually really happened, with the solution and the power of all that information. And remember, it's entertaining. I know Noam Chomsky isn't a laugh a minute, but let's face it, right? It's gripping stuff, right? All this stuff is so amazing, so magical, and so unfortunately unavailable anywhere else on Earth except right here, tonight only, right now at 1-800-735-0230. And what we're going to hear now is that we should probably caution people. Grab your Kleenex. This is unbelievable what we're going to hear.
I'm Benjamin, and this is my sister, Jessica Pensner. She's 16 years old.
Hi, I'm Jessica. This is my brother, Ben, and he is 13 years old. Okay, Ben, so when did you come out?
I was 10, fifth grade. It was during a school day, and my teacher, Jude, he was gay, too. He is gay, too. And I thought that I liked a couple guys in my class. I was really, really confused because of all the things that was going on. I was 10. I don't think I knew very much about that kind of stuff. So then, the first time I told anybody was my mom. I went back to my mom's house after school, and then I sort of put my face to the back of my mom on my mom's back. Then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And she was like, "What did you say?" And then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And then she was like, "Oh, okay." And that's all she said.
And you told me after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you? Because I couldn't see inside your head at the time.
It was really different for me. I mean, I've never experienced something like that before. So we were in Mom's room, and I told you, and I said, "Jessica, I think I'm gay." And then you said, "I think I'm bi." And then when we hugged, we were crying, and then I felt really, really open. I felt, like, really close to you.
And that was, like, the first time that we felt so close, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because you were only 10, and that was a bad time for me, too. We were both just going through some really weird times. I'm really glad you told me then.
Me too. So, how did you feel about it?
Oh my gosh. Well, when you told me, I wasn't just crying. I was sobbing. I didn't know how to feel, like, to tell you the truth. I have never been against gays or against anything that they stood for because, you know, I was still am bisexual. But you, my brother, being gay was such a trip for me. I wasn't sad that you were gay. I wasn't disappointed or anything. It was just so overwhelming. And then afterwards, I had some time to think about it and to figure out my feelings, and I was so happy. I was one of those girls who would always want the gay best friend who we could, you know, hang out with and go talk about girly things, and oh my gosh, that person is my brother. It's amazing to have you, Ben. It really is. And the fact that you're there for me and are always so nice, you're just such a nice person. And I can't believe that I have you. And that you knew by 10? I mean, really?
Yeah, it was really weird for me, too.
What did you talk to Jude about, anyway?
Oh, fifth grade teacher. After I told our parents, our dad thought of go talking to Jude because he knew that he was gay because we found out about a paper that they handed out at school.
That said that Jude was gay?
No, that said that Jude was living with his husband.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which basically says that Jude is gay.
Yeah. So then Dad said, maybe we should go talk to him and see what his perception of this was. So after school, Dad and Mom went to the school after all the classes were done. We sat down at one of the tables, and then I told Jude, and then he was like, "Okay." And then we talked about how he was gay and how he came out, that he couldn't come out until college. and he thought of me as really brave of coming out at 10 years old. And then we talked about his high school years, how he forced himself to keep his girlfriend because his friends were not gay supporters, and how he thought of it. And he said that it felt like torture. So he came out in college and he regretted it, that he didn't come out sooner, and that he was really happy for me.
Are you happy that you came out so soon?
Yeah. I don't have to lie as much as I thought I did.
Did you know at 10, or did you know earlier than that?
I had a pretty okay perception of it. At 10, I was still iffy about it. There was this one person that I did tell in middle school. I forgot who he was, but he said that you can't know until you're 17. So I was like, oh, okay. But later on, I got a better understanding of it, and then I said, wow, that was such a lie. But anyway, at 10, I was not sure at all. I was confused, as most people are at that age, if they think of it.
Well, now we go to Renaissance Arts Academy, right?
Yeah.
And we came there right after that whole fifth grade fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
And our school is very open with that kind of thing. And anyone who is of any sexual orientation does not feel out of place. Did you feel like you had a better understanding of who you were in that school?
Yeah. I had a lot of people to talk to. I felt so much better at Ren Arts than at VCCS, my middle school, because it was really small, so everybody knew each other, and it was really interesting to talk to people about it because they were really open to the subject. And there are some gay people at our school, just not as many.
Is it easier to talk about it with your friends at Ren Arts?
Yes. Yeah, it really is. I actually talk about it as a regular subject now because I've talked to them about it so much. There's this place called the Renaissance Fair, and there's this girl named Taylor, and she's really good. She's a friend of mine, and she's a lesbian. And me and her talk about it in detail. It's really nice to talk to her about that.
Are you glad that you have someone like that, that you can release what you've been holding in for so long to?
Yes, it really is. I'm so happy that I don't have to bottle it up so much. It makes me feel incredible. It's awesome. It's I've done it before. I've stopped myself from telling people that I was gay, and I have to lie, and I'm not the best liar. I suck at lying.
Yeah, you do.
Then they ask me again, and I have to lie again.
Well, you don't have to lie anymore.
I know.
You don't have to lie to anyone, even if they are against what you are. It doesn't matter. They can't do anything to you. And if you ever need help, I'm here, and Sierra is here, and all our friends are here. Just don't worry about it, okay?
Okay.
So now you're at Ren Arts, and you're the viola prodigy. You're the gay, blonde, blue-eyed viola prodigy. How does that feel to be so wonderful?
I like it how everybody knows me, and I don't know them. It's fun. Sometimes I feel kind of famous at that school. It's really, really nice.
That's good. You're going to play something, right?
Yeah.
You want to go do that right now?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
I'm going to be playing the second Bach cello suite in D minor. This is Jessica Pensner.
And this is Ben Pensner.
And we thank you for listening to us.
Thank you.
And we are back with you while Benjamin Pensner plays for us his viola. We are back at the Pacifica Radio Archives National Fund Drive Marathon Broadcast, the Campus Campaign 2.0, the LGBT Hour with IMRU crowd, Taryn, Steve Pride, Rita Gonzalez, Carrie Harrison, Trevor Eister, I'm Brian DeShazer. Everybody, I want you to take a moment and just sort of appeal to the audience as we listen to Benjamin play how important it is to take our history out of our vault and into those classrooms.
Incredibly important. I mean, as Terrence said earlier, the younger generation these days, when I'm talking to kids, it's like they don't realize what's going on. I just assume they do know what's happened, but in many cases, no. It's not taught in high schools. I mean, luckily, you'll be giving some of these premiums will go to schools, and that'll be an amazing thing. They can learn not only general history, but the gay history. It's an amazing, amazing thing the Pacific Archives does.
And you too, every week on IMRU, 1-800-735-0230.
Well, so is Taryn. Taryn James is on the show. There's a group of us. But it's very important, like what Taryn says, when he was saying that he understood growing up, but there's a lot of kids out there that still don't. I recently just took a cross-country trip to North Carolina by car. And it's amazing when you go through certain areas where they're very rural. They don't have the opportunities that we do. Here in Los Angeles, we're very lucky that we have the internet. We have access to a lot of things. But these other places don't. They don't understand what we went through to get as far as we did. So it's very important that the schools know our history. Our history is very important because that's who we are today.
And here's our challenge. If you want to take LGBT history, the leftist progressive history, civil rights, arts and literature, black power, science, Native American studies, Latino Chicano studies, along with us. It's us as a group. It's not just the LGBT group.
And we're all of those other other groups, too. We're
right,
part of that.
Absolutely.
We're in every part of history.
Absolutely. We're not segmented or separated. We're inclusive in this Campus Campaign Pack. And what about you coming in and sponsoring a school in North Carolina in one of those rural areas? We'll pick it out for you. We'll find it. 1-800-735-0230.
1-800-735-0230. 56 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you along with all of us. And you know, if you were to take like Oscar Wilde and just rip that out of all the schools, rip all that literature out, and let's go after Billy Shakespeare too, who allegedly had a bit of magical moments here and there. Imagine taking away all of the efforts, all of the contributions of gay people since time was first recorded. You would end up with a one-dimensional world, not to mention your couch would be at another angle right now and your draperies would look like hell. That apart. It is so extraordinary, these contributions. If it's 10%, as we see in the animal kingdom, whether it's a dolphin or a fruit fly, it doesn't really matter, because the fact is it's real, it's aggressive, it's a huge contribution, and you get to leave a huge legacy by dialing 1-800-735-0230 and making sure that this huge history, this vault that Brian sits over like a mother duck with his little wings flapping the dust off these things. Oh, and by the way, Trevor is maybe a little bi-curious. I didn't mean to declare otherwise.
All right, so the number, 1-800-735-0230. Thank you, Taryn, Steve, Rita, Carrie Harrison, Trevor, for joining me on the LGBT Hour. Coming up next, Latino Chicano Studies with Mark Torres and his guests. Thank you. Please keep calling, 1-800-735-0230, the Campus Campaign 2.0. Not had a chance to call? Be a part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign 2.0. Donate once and give twice. When you contribute to the archives today, we'll send a compilation of historic recordings from our archives to a school or college of your choice. Civil rights, U.S. history, arts and literature, the environment, Malcolm X, Noam Chomsky, Studs Terkel, Latino-Chicano Studies, Native American Studies, LGBT Studies. You name it, the Pacifica Radio Archives is here for you. 1-800-735-0230. You're helping to put history into the hands of the future. Our phone volunteers are waiting to hear from you right now at 1-800-735-0230 or donate online by going to supportpra.org. Thank you for supporting the Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign 2.0.
I'm Lamont Yakey. I teach history at California State University, Los Angeles. I'm an associate professor in history there. I use the Pacifica materials in several of my classes, and it's really become indispensable for my U.S. history survey courses. But I also have upper division specialty courses that will get graduate students, such as this course on the U.S. Civil Rights Movement. Well, when students can actually hear these important figures who've shaped our lives for the better in their own words and comment on their travails and their lives, it does much more than I could do as a lecturer in front of a class.
Dear Pacifica Radio Archives, thank you for the recent donation of From the Vault Campus Campaign box set to the A. Pierre Gillerman Library. I'm sure it will be an asset to our library's collection. We do appreciate your generosity and continued support of the library. Sincerely, Tiffany, Liberty University Library, Lynchburg, Virginia.
You're tuned to the national two-day broadcast from the Pacifica Radio Archives as we kick off our Campus Campaign 2.0 Preservation Fund Drive. We welcome listeners to 99.5 WBAI New York, 89.3 WPFW Washington, D.C., 90.1 KPFT Houston, 94.1 and 89.3 KPFA KPFB Berkeley, California, 88.1 KFCF Fresno, California, and 90.7 and 98.7 FM KPFK Los Angeles and Santa Barbara.
Hi, this is Dolores Huerta. I am so happy that the archives are finally giving their archival material that they have on Cesar Chavez and the early days of the farm workers movement. This is so precious and so historical. It cannot be found anywhere else. And this is going to be made available to the schools and the campuses so that young people will understand this history and what it means to them in their lives and the lessons that they can take from this wonderful struggle of the farm workers movement with the leadership of Cesar Chavez. So I'm also very happy that the archives have included my interview. Views also, and again, that is so important, especially for our young women, because they need to know that women can also be out there in the leadership of these struggles. I am so happy, and thank you for doing this. This is such a great contribution that you are making, a gift to our society and to our history, and especially to our children. Thank you very much. Si se puede.
The Campus Campaign 2.0 is very simple. You donate once, but you give twice. When you make a contribution to the archives today, a duplicate of your selected gift will be sent to a school or college of your choice. So you get two for one for you and one for the school. Last year, you and the listeners raised $156,000 in one day and sponsored 783 schools nationwide. This year, we have 2 days, and our goal is $280,000 and 1,500 new schools sponsored. Call this number, 1-800-735-0230. That's toll-free, 1-800-735-0230. You can donate online by going to supportpra.org. And now we return to the Campus Campaign 2.0 National Pacifica broadcast.
And welcome back to the final hour of this day at the Campus Campaign 2.0 for the Pacifica Radio Archives. My name is Mark Torres, returning to the airwaves with Tony Bates. Tony, how are you doing tonight?
Brother, I am tired. We have been Pacifica fundraising all afternoon.
We have. we've covered all the bases, and this is the final base that we have to cover, because for the Campus Campaign 2.0, we expanded certain education subject matters, but we included new ones for the very first time, and we're very proud to announce that we are including the Chicano-Latino education pack for the very first time. So we got to go through our archives and find all the classic Latino programming, which is about a telephone book thick.
Wow.
So we're very happy to go through it.
You know, Mark, we're here in Los Angeles, and we might all know what a Chicano is. I wonder if the entire national audience knows.
Now, that is a very good point. Now, that was probably defined best by Batita Martinez, which is one of the programs included in the Pacifica Radio Archive pack. But that is the consciously aware Mexican-American living in what is now a different land. One day it was one thing, and the next day the border moved over, and bam, there are a bunch of people indigenous to this land who are no longer citizens to this land. However, that's under dispute, because the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was signed in 1848. It was signed by the general and ratified by the U.S. Senate in 1848 of March, and that was supposed to have given Mexicans living in this area full American citizenship, as well as Mexican citizenship. As we know today, immigration is one of the hottest button issues there is on the table. And that's what this education pack is all about, because we want to get to the root of the matter. Who are Latinos? Who are Chicanos? What is going on here? And we're very happy to have as a special guest for this evening by telephone, we have Rosalio Munoz, who is here to join us. He was part of a 1968 symposium on the campus of UCLA here in Los Angeles that had all of the luminaries of the Chicano and Latino movement all under one roof at the big hall in UCLA, about 1,000 people in attendance. And this was the topic of discussion. Rosalio, are you there?
I'm right here. Glad to be with you, Mark and Tony.
Okay. I think we're going to throw this to you, Rosalio. What did you find out in 1968 what a Chicano was, and has that changed today at all?
Oh, it has developed and grown today. But this event at UCLA that February in 1968 was a very seminal event for myself, but also for the Chicano movement here in Los Angeles, and as it turned out, across the nation. This event that was sponsored by the United Mexican American Students, which a year later changed the name, actually across the country, to MECHA, Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán, that people would be more familiar with now. And it was held, I think, something like a week and a half before the walkouts in five East L.A. schools of thousands and thousands of students. What we had were four of the big main voices of the Chicano movement nationally, and also as moderators, key writers and scholars at the event. Headlining the event was Reyes Lopez Tijerina from New Mexico, who had led the land grant struggles and had arrested a sheriff and taken over a courthouse on in New Mexico using citizens' arrest. There was Corky Gonzalez, who became probably the most prominent voice out of Denver, who organized mass youth conferences of Chicanos from all over the country in 1969, 1970, and was a major figure, just second to Cesar Chavez. And really the main metropolitan youth-oriented leader in above the Chicano movement. There was Bert Corona, who was one of the great organizers in labor from the Depression, during the World War II, the Zoot Suit and Sleepy Lagoon cases, a great political organizer who also became a major, the father of the immigrant rights movement here in Los Angeles. At the time, he was a leader of the Mexican-American Political Association, and also the fourth, Luis Valdez, who was the head of the Teatro Campesino that had grown out of the farm worker unions movement and became the most notable Mexican American teatro group. And Luis developed the play Zoot Suit, the movie La Bamba, and many other great productions, and was a tremendous orator and poet and writer as well.
Well,
and those were the four major figures that we had at that event, showing people that there was a Chicano movement. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, well, Rosalio, let me just interrupt you for a minute to say that you've mentioned so many things and so many names that most of our listeners' heads are spinning right now, because it's a really rich and nuanced history that most people don't know anything about. And that is what the Pacifica Radio Archives has in our collection. We have an incredible wealth of information, so that if you actually take a look at the history of Latinos, Mexicanos, Chicanos in this land, you would get a slightly different perspective than you get if you watch a Lou Dobbs CNN program that show, a bunch of crazed-looking Latino types, whatever that means, ready to take back Aslan. So it's a really detailed, enriched history. And I wanted to get into a clip right now to just give the listeners a feel for well, why don't you characterize the times? Here we go. Let's flash back to 1968. The civil rights movement was in full bloom. In many ways, it had ended in a way, because Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in April. So this took place before that. Is that correct?
Correct. And it took place just a week before the big walkouts from the East Los Angeles high schools. But it did follow the starting of grassroots organizing throughout East Los Angeles, the beginnings of the farm worker union organizing and spreading throughout the nation. People were building up to the, there was the poverty program setting up the operating in poor neighborhoods all throughout the United States. We Mexican Americans had elected in Los Angeles our first representative to the Board of Board of Education, excuse me.
Who is that?
Julian Nava, who later became an ambassador to Mexico. He served on the board for about 12 years. But it was really the first win in local elections in about 15 years that we had. So there was growing expectations and growing militancy that exploded. Actually, after just a week and a half after this particular event, because just to give you a little bit of my own background, I was on the student council as Ross Munoz, not Rosalio, as the educational policy commissioner, when one of the UMAS leaders, I'd gone to a couple meetings but shied away, Moctezuma Esparza, now a very well-known movie producer. He did the Walkout movie, he did Selena, so many other things, new things coming out. But he comes up to me and says, we want to have this symposium, and he mentions the name, and I said, oh, great, great, great. I didn't know who any of them were, but he said, we want to get several thousand dollars from the student government to do this. And I went, well, we'll see what we can do. And he gets a hold of me, kind of by the lapel, and says, Munoz, look in the mirror. You're an Indian. You're going to be part of this movement whether you want to be or not. And that was very convincing, and I helped get the money.
Okay, Rosalio, let me just interrupt you. We need to get to one of these clips here, and we need to get some of the phones ringing. It's interesting that you mentioned Moctezuma Esparza, because we're going to go to him first. These are reflections from him just a short while ago on that time
as before we go to the actual cuts from Al Juarez and Ralph Guzman, Corky Gonzalez, and others. But I just want to encourage everybody out in the five Pacifica listening areas and all around the world who are listening on the web to please help support the campus campaign. What we're going to do is we're going to place these invaluable resource materials on the history of the Chicano and Latino movement here in Los Angeles and in this country. What was happening here in 1968 in the mid-60s, late 60s was a microcosm on what would eventually explode onto the world stage as a massive immigration issue. And we need to get these base facts down before we can even address this immigration issue. So please call right now, 1-800-735-0230. We have specially selected material thanks to two professors from Mission Valley State Mission Valley College in Sylmar. Is that your hometown, Tony?
Sir, no, sir. Gaffney, South Carolina.
And John Morales and Professor, two wonderful, and Jose Maldonado helped us select these materials. We need to get these out into classrooms so that all people, all colors, all disciplines can be exposed to this invaluable material. A $200 donation will take this incredible 90-hour education pack, and you can have a copy for yourself to share with your family and friends, and a duplicate copy will be sent to the school, university, or library of your choice. So many people have not heard this information, but we want to go to one of these clips real quick, and we'll be right back with you, Rosalio Munoz, in just a minute. Let's play track number one. This is Moctezuma Esparza reflecting on that day in 1968.
May 1968. UMass UCLA had just been one of the key players in helping to organize the Chicano student walkouts of just 2 months prior, where 20,000 high school kids throughout the city of Los Angeles, and in particular Roosevelt, Belmont, Garfield, and Wilson, went out on strike for over 2 weeks protesting the tremendous dropout rate, the fact that almost no Chicanos or Chicanas got to go to college. And this is the first large group of Chicano students who have managed to get into college and have gotten into one of the most prestigious colleges in the country, UCLA at the time, and who have said, we are going to open up the opportunities for our brothers and sisters who are still in the barrio, who are being told that they are not worth anything, that they cannot go to college, that they can't be professionals, at a time in which less than 2% of Chicanos got to go to college, and even fewer graduated. And the movement, the Chicano movement, was in a tremendous power push at this particular moment, coming out of what we were hearing was going on in Crystal City in Texas, where Chicanos took over the city council. What was going on in New Mexico was Reyes López Tijerina and the courthouse raid and the reaction of the military there and the government, who actually rounded up people and put them in a corral while they were tracking down Reyes. Of what was going on with the farm workers, the march that had already occurred to Delano, the strikes that were continuing. And what we were pushing, what we needed to do, which was to create an urban Chicano civil rights struggle. And we were organizing at that point every single day. There was a core group of us that were, at that moment in time, in September of 67, UMAS jumped from 20 members to over 150 members because there was this first large group of students that had come in. And there was tremendous commitment. There was tremendous desire to make a change, to have an impact, to transform the possibilities for our community, to create our participation at the table in the society, in politics, in culture, in education, in all aspects. There was a tremendous flowering. Luis Valdez was at the forefront at that moment with the Triato Campesino. There were triatos that were being born everywhere. And there was a tremendous day-to-day activism that was pulling everyone together. And UCLA at that particular moment was a focal point. And so I was privileged to be a part of a group of Al Juarez, Carlos Vasquez, Juan Gomez Quiñones, Susan Racho, Evelyn Vasquez, Pat Tamayo, Terry McKenna, just a whole group of people who said, we are going to dedicate our lives to transform possibilities for our community. And we had a focal point through UMAS, and we had learned how to get the institution to support our goals. So, you know, I and several others, we wrote a proposal, we got a grant, we went out and created this symposium, we publicized it throughout the community, we bussed in kids from East L.A., from Roosevelt and Garfield and Lincoln, we publicized it everywhere we could, and Ackerman Union was full. There were 2,000 people there if there was one. It was brimming. There were people everywhere. I remember Mangas Coloradas, bare-chested with his armbands, and Francisco Martinez with his long beard, and a whole group of people that were just celebrating that we were there and that we were creating a statement and that our voice was finally being heard on the main stages in the university and that we were creating this opening so that our community would have the power that we represented and that we would be able to exercise it and participate in the society. And it was an extraordinary moment that electrified everyone and that moved us forward. It was nonstop. And from there, within a few days, the East LA 13 were indicted and I was in jail and the community was again organizing. And there were thousands of people that went out and protested outside of the police Parker Center and in front of City Hall. It was one of the most astounding periods. And it was beautiful.
Surcando el cielo de América.
Okay, that was film producer Moctezuma Esparza, then a student activist who helped create the UMAS education program and symposium at UCLA, describing what was going on there. I just want to get to a quick clip from Ralph Guzman, who was one of the educators that spoke at that symposium, to give a feel about the times, what was going on in 1968, what was the reality on the ground floor for the average Latino in America. Let's hit
to
that.
Those in the ghetto, there is no question that the police are designed to keep them there. Thus, it is not merely a question of physical brutality by the police against members of the minority. We can assume that the incidence of physical brutality is small. We can assume that for the sake of argument. But far more important is the daily psychic brutality, the contempt and the scorn, the assumption of wrongdoing, the humiliation and shame before women and children. All these destroy a man in his own eyes and force him to question the basics, the basis of that law, the validity of that order, and the justice of that peace, so precious to others, that they are willing to destroy his manhood. Fifty years ago, the cop on the beat was a human being. He knew his people and was known by them. Together, both sides contended for a rough sort of justice, occasionally at the expense of law and order. Today, impersonal policemen patrol in cars, insulated and isolated, unknowing and unknown. Consequently, two great anonymous forces remain in a state of social tension, the police versus the people. Without knowledge and human contact, there can be no provision for justice. And one cannot convince the residents of the ghettos that a policeman is his friend. The separation of justice and law enforcement is one of the great tragedies of modern life. In a supposedly underdeveloped land, across the Pacific. Every general in the Army must spend 1 month a year as a private. If every American had to appear before the state employment service agencies for a monthly lecture on his disabilities, the arrogance of the lecturers would outrage the nation. As it is, this arrogance goes unchecked and unpunished. The clientele, on the other hand, merely goes unrewarded and convinced once again that government is an instrument of their misery and not of their salvation. For middle-class America, the educational system is a means by which all their dreams will come true. Not only will their children develop their individual potential, but they will also be gracefully socialized into the ethos of middle-class values. Studies as late as yesterday indicate that the educational system is a millstone around the necks of most Mexican-American children. Where they should be prepared for leadership, they are prepared for passivity. Where they should be encouraged to aspire to the limits of their abilities, they are prepared to settle for less. They receive neither the satisfaction of their own cultural values nor the benefits of the majoritarian. It is hard to talk about the freedom of opportunity to those deliberately prepared to be unskilled workers. It is difficult to postulate the value of a college education to those who were encouraged from aspiring to it. And so, freedom has a hollow ring where it involves no choice for your destiny. In reply to protests by Mexican-American college students, professional educators assert that they don't want high school children running the schools. If the children were running the schools, could they make the buildings more dilapidated? Could they make the rules more arbitrary? Could they make the system more useless for the Mexican-American than it is today?
Well, I think Ralph Guzman got a huge laugh, a huge applause on that one, Tony, because he was breaking down what the reality was in schools then, and I don't think very much has changed today. The dilapidated schools, the under-resourced schools without the proper books and supplies, where counselors are encouraging you to go into the military as opposed to pursue professional careers or higher education. One thing after another, a disproportionate number of kids from the inner city, Latinos and blacks and others, were being drafted and dying in Vietnam. The whole situation was to the boiling point where they finally said, enough is enough. But people don't know this. This is material hidden in the Pacifica Radio Archives. We want to unleash it in the body of knowledge of mankind. One way that you can do that is get to the phones right now, 1-800-735-0230. You can take away these unbelievable speeches by the movers and shakers in the Latino and Chicano movement, which really brought to the forefront the conditions in the inner cities for the Latino Chicano communities, in which I think to characterize it properly, you would have to say so many contributions were made from the building of the cities, the building of the roads, the building of the very schools that we were denied access to the day laborers, to picking the food that everybody in this country ate. The contributions, one after another, were disregarded, and Latinos were second-class citizens and not citizens at all. This underlying information must be known.
You know, Mark, when we have the discussion, and this is why the Pacifica Radio Archives is so important, when we have the discussion, it's often black and white. There is no brown. The story. In fact, one of the earliest cases of school segregation in this country was a Chicano case right here. It was Mendez versus Westminster in Orange County. I think it was the Westminster School District. One of the earliest civil rights cases in this country.
People think Brown versus Board of Education, but these earlier cases were precedents for that.
Absolutely. They were precedents for Brown versus Board of Education, and this is what's left out of the discussion, but it's the discussion that we have here at Pacifica, folks. And that's what we're asking you to support. Why are we here? We've given you a lot of information. We've given you about a half an hour. Now we have to ask for your support. Why this is so important is because we're bringing all of this to the discussion. We're not going to leave out our Brown brothers and sisters. It makes sense to have this discussion. As the demographic grows and changes in this country, their voices will be heard, but they have always been heard here at Pacifica, here at Pacifica Radio Archives. So now it's time for you to do your part. We will send this disc out to you for a pledge of $75. What you must do, your part, is to call 800-735-0230. And since we've spent so much time with our interview and with our clips, we need to hear from you now. Please be the first person to call us and make the pledge of support. We need 6 callers to start so that we can get started. Just to do that, $75 pledge to hear your history, to hear your voice spoken. How often are you left out of the equation? And now is your opportunity to educate yourself, not just yourself, but your children. We're going to do this. This is called the Campus Campaign 2.0, folks. What we do here is when you pledge your support, we're going to send a copy of this, not just to you, but to a school, a library, a learning institution of your choice. How powerful is that? What you can do with your pledges. If you pledge at the $200 level, you're going to get 90 hours of information in MP3 format, which you can play in most regular CD players, but that information will come out to you, just to you and to a school. We were talking earlier, Mark, about a school that someone sent this to last year, and the children were so inspired when they heard their history. History they were not being taught in school, as they were being taught about all the things that old white men did. They never heard about themselves. There were never, if you listen to just that history, there were never people of color involved. And so we're asking you now to stand up for that. You don't have to be a Chicano to understand the importance of this. You just have to be a Pacifica listener and supporter. You can be in Washington, D.C. You can be in New York, WBAI, where I hail from. You can be in Berkeley at KPFA. You can be at KPFT in Houston. All of the Pacifica stations are right here in Los Angeles, where we have such a huge Chicano population. We want to hear from you. Not want to, we need to. Help us to support the Pacifica Radio Archives. How do you do that? Call us, 800-735-0230, and make a donation to this incredible archive that we house right upstairs here in this building.
You made a really good point, Tony, in that there are huge gaps in our history that we generally are not exposed to. Even people like myself, I did not know any of this was going on. I was very small at the time in 1968, but you know, you don't hear about this, and this is something that we use to fill the gaps, the huge open, you know, highway-wide gaps in history that are missing, and especially as the immigration issue is going to come to the forefront. I mean, it's already there now, but as we deal with our economy and a couple of wars going on overseas, this has been put off to the side for the moment. But it's an ugly giant ready to rear its head, and in order for us to have a rational discussion, we must know our history. That's what we have here in the Pacifica Radio Archives. 1-800-735-0230 is the number where you can gain these invaluable gems where the discussion was made 40 years ago yet are still relevant today. 1-800-735-0230. Let's get Rosalio Munoz back on the line for a moment. Rosalio, are you still there?
Sure, right here.
You've been listening to this discussion. What can you say about what was taking place back in 1968 and pull it forward into today's context where immigration is an explosive issue that's ready to blow up, and people haven't really made that rational discussion? We've heard the sound bites. We've seen people with, you know, semi-automatics worn on the outside of their clothing. We've seen the Minutemen. We see the Lou Dobbs specials. What is it about this time that makes this issue so explosive when the rational discussion was made 40 years ago and even before that? How did we get to this place?
Well, number one, in that audience that you have on that tape were many of the people that were, some of them were in high school at that time, some of us were the students of UMAS that helped to bring the event together, were on the stage and were the organizers of the mass mega marches here in Los Angeles in 2006. One of the speakers, Bert Corona, was really the founder of that movement and also of our political empowerment movement, that once people had marched in the millions on the streets in 2006, they turned out to vote in the primary and final election by the millions extra in 2008, electing Barack Obama as president. And here you have the seeds of that Chicano movement, that the empowerment of our people that came to light. So here you have one of the seminal events that led to that development. How it empowered us, you couldn't believe. A half a year after that, I was elected, not as Ross Munoz, but as Rosalio Munoz, as the president of UCLA. And then with many of the students and people that were at that hearing, became a leader of the Chicano anti-war movement, and we went out and organized tens and tens of thousands of people against the Vietnam War in barrios all throughout the United States. We started trying to organize an independent Chicano political party. We did so many other things that began giving us the education on how to do that. And this event, you can't imagine what the reality was. I was there in the grand ballroom of UCLA. I'd been 12 years in school, 4 years at UCLA. I'd had three Latino teachers in the 10th and 11th grade in Spanish classes. I had no other Chicano teachers, Latino teachers, my whole experience or at UCLA. And here in the grand ballroom were these great leaders, one of them, Reyes Tijerina, speaking completely in Spanish. It blew my mind. We didn't used to be allowed to speak Spanish on campus, in grammar schools and other things. And here were all these white kids that I had gone to school with, was in movements with, and had helped elect me to a lower office in the student government. And at first, I was shocked and ashamed. They're not understanding, and I felt bad for them. But I listened to what Mr. Tijerina, El Tigre, was saying in Spanish on why we had the right to speak Spanish, why we had the obligation to speak Spanish. And it just was almost a life-changing inspiration to be in that crowd, to have all those people. But the message and the breadth that we had after that, a year later at UCLA, in the same room, we had a similar conference on Chicanas, where Dolores Huerta spoke. And Corky Gonzalez's wife, the head of Chicano Welfare Rights. So that this meeting that we had there, that march in 1968, and the speakers were people, you know, the newspapers, they blackballed those people. Most of the history books blackball those people because these were grassroots movements. These were not movements that were started with foundation grants or started out of government programs. These were started out of the dues-paying mobilization out in the field and in the barrios, and these were the speakers who had dedicated their lives and had been in jail and had been sacrificing so much, and we were getting a chance to see them.
Well, Rosalia, let me just interrupt you and ask you, what is the benefit to really humanity, not just to the Latino and Chicano students that are coming up today, but really to humanity to get these materials out to the campuses, the universities, the colleges, the high schools, the middle schools, and libraries across America?
Well, it can add to the empowerment that we need now today. When we have global warming facing us, when we have a nuclear proliferation facing us, when economic ripples in one part of the globe become tsunamis all over the globe, of how people can stand up on their own and begin democratically taking power in their lives. And this is an example of that. For now, of course, we Latinos in the United States are a force in the most powerful country. Latinos on this hemisphere are a force. And you'll learn a lot about the history, the values, and the direction that are part of the trajectory we have right now, right from base leaders who, as our community grows, will get into the history books, both in California, nationally, and around the globe. And it's right there on those tapes. You can get tapes of the Chicano moratorium of when I'm giving the opening speech, and right 5 minutes later the police are breaking in and starting to beat the people, and you can hear that happening live on those tapes. Live tapes of Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta as they were starting their work in developing that union that became so influential all throughout this nation and world. You'll learn that this hemisphere has a people, both mestizo and indigenous, that have much to contribute and are more and more part and going to be more a part of our national scene and the world scene.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Rosalio Munoz. We have to get back to encouraging our listeners to call in right now. That we're on a national broadcast. This is the Campus Campaign 2.0. We're on here in Los Angeles at KPFK. We're on in Berkeley and the San Francisco Bay Area at KPFA. We're in New York City at WBAI. We're in Washington, D.C. at WPFW. And we're in Houston, Texas at KPFT. Together, our five network stations have been contributing to the Pacifica Radio Archive since 1949. We have 60 years of incredible recordings documenting the social history of our nation for the last 60 years. We have put together the best of that in this Campus Campaign 2.0, 90 hours of materials on MP3 files that we want to get out to both the listeners and to institutions of higher learning all across America. The way that you do that is you call 1-800-735-0230. That way, your donation goes twice as far because you get to receive a gift and that duplicate copy goes to a school, university, or library of your choice.
800-735-0230. You know, Mark and Alan, I've heard many people calling for the voices of Latino folks, of Chicano folks. We can't do it with just rhetoric, folks. You've got to step up. When you hear your voice on the airwaves, you've got to pledge in support of that. It can't be just talk. When we bring that voice to the airwaves, you've got to pledge with your dollars. That's what we hear. Not just voices, not just rhetoric. We need action from you. You have to dial that phone and make us know that this is really what you will support. Will you support? Will you be happy that there is a section in this $200 pledge package that includes the history, the voices of Dolores Huerta, a section on the resistance of the Maya, a section on Carlos Castaneda and Lila Downs, also the Delano grape strike with Cesar Chavez, all of that, pieces of your history. If you don't step up to the plate, the management at these five stations and the two affiliate stations don't know that this is what you want to hear. You have to make that phone call and let us know that your $200 will speak in your voice. 800-735-0230. We have a single caller on the phone line where you're being heard across this nation. I have seen Chicanos, Mark, from New York to Chicago. I shouldn't say Chicago. I haven't been there. To Georgia, to Los Angeles, to wherever I've begun to be. Not my hometown quite yet, but wherever I've gone in the country. You know, when I grew up in South Carolina, I never saw a Chicano person. You could only be black, white, or Chinese. That was your only choices. The rednecks had made it so. Now, as I went back to Georgia, I saw Chicano folks all over. I went to a family reunion. I was surprised. I know that you're there. I know that you're within the sound of our voice. Your dollars make a difference. If you want to pledge $75, you can get just this disc, and that alone is 10 hours of information. 10 hours.
And we still send a duplicate copy of that disc to a school, university, or library of your choice. Any gift that you get during this campus campaign, we duplicate that gift and send to a school, campus, or library of your choice.
Talk is cheap.
And you know what would
Alan
be,
Minsky.
Would be a fantastic thing would be the Chicago Public Libraries, because the Latino population is massive. You might recall back a few years ago the massive immigrant rights marches that started. I mean, yes, they were largest in Southern California, and they were huge. They were massive. They were an incredible outpouring of people into the streets of Southern California like I think this region has never seen ever before. I think those were the largest public demonstrations in LA history. But the movement really kicked off in Chicago, which has a massive Chicano Latino population now. And those preceded the marches in Los Angeles by a few days. So this is really material. Get the campus campaign, send it to the Chicago Public Library, because there's no Pacifica station in Chicago, these voices have not been heard in Chicago. And because the Chicano population, Latino population has been in Southern California longer, it's we here at KPFK who've delivered this material so much more than, you know, has ever been available to the people in Chicago. And because of that, the resources on Chicano and Latino studies are really not available to this huge Latino Chicano population in Chicago as it is here in Southern California. So that's one recommendation I have. Send these to the Chicago Public Library.
Two callers on the line, Mark. That is certainly not enough.
We've got to improve on that.
Yes, we must. 800-735-0230. When you pledge your support of $200 or accept the $75 level to get the single disc, we're going to send a copy out, as has been described, to any school or library or learning institution of your choosing. But if you don't dial the number, we don't get to send it to you or to them. When I drive around this city, I see Chicano folks, Mark, oddly enough. I see a huge population. The fact that we have two callers on the line shocks me. I know that we can do better than that, Southern California alone, but we are also being heard in Washington, D.C., where a massive Chicano population has grown up. We're also being heard at KPFA, in the Bay Area, where our Chicano brothers and sisters have been for years. We are also being heard in Houston, Texas. Are you telling me there aren't Chicanos there? You're kidding me?
Half the population.
And in New York City, where I am now living and working, I see folks from Puebla all over the place. Folks, the fact that you have two callers on the line doesn't make sense to me. Let's hear your voice. Make those phones ring. Say to us that, yes, we want to hear our voices. We want our history on our Pacifica station, on our public station. Does it make a difference to you? Will you stand up and support? We need to hear from you. The number to call is 800-735-0230. This is not a test. This is the real deal. What are we doing here? We're raising money for the Pacifica Radio Archives, a library of over 50,000 tapes of movements of civil rights. In the pack, by the way, we're not just sending out this Chicano item. For your $200 pledge, you're going to hear the From the Vault on Civil Rights, the second version. You're going to hear about United States history. We have some arts and literature in there, and there is some amazing stuff on that disc. From the Vault, science is included. Native American studies is included in this. Gay and lesbian studies, great voices. All of that is going to come out to you in the package, but you've got to make that call first. We have to hear you speak. And when those phones rings, that's how we know you're speaking. 800-735-0230. Call us. Tell the volunteer what school or library you want to send that information to. We will do that for you.
And for those of you listening in the KPFK signal areas up in Santa Barbara in Southern California, of course, this is the hour now where American Indian Airwaves is heard. The fantastic work that Marcus and Corey and Larry bring to you each week. And certainly, this is such a tremendous collection of material from the archives, including 10 hours of material on the Native American studies. And to send these to a school, if you're a regular listener to American Indian Airwaves, you know what it would mean to get this incredible material into a school where otherwise people would not have access to it. The number again is 800-735-0230. And let me remind people again, here's the deal. You pledge $200, you get 90 hours of material, you get a copy for yourself, and this stuff is so edifying, so illuminating, and often so entertaining and fun. And then it also goes to a educational institution or library of your choice.
We cannot rely on public education anymore. The state of education is horrendous. State budgets are at all-time lows. States are on the verge of bankruptcy. The resources in public schools has been depleted. We need to take it upon ourselves to get these important materials out to our families, our children, so that they are educated properly. We need to end the age of ignorance. We need to resurge back into the age of enlightenment.
And the age of inclusion, as we were discussing earlier, when the conversation is always black and white, and yet there is a rich history of Latino, Chicano struggle in this country, of movements that made a difference, of Cesar Chavez, of Dolores Huerta, of people making, really not just making a difference for Latino people, but for this country, in the history of this country. Folks, you must speak up for that. You must pledge your support, and you must let us know that indeed you will pledge if your voices, if your history is on the air. How many people do you know that actually heard of the case of Mendez versus Westminster, which is one of the earliest cases, precedent-setting case, which was Brown versus the Board of Education was based upon. That happened here in this state. You were not taught that, but it is mentioned on these airwaves on a regular basis. Why? Because we're going to bring all of the history to you. It's preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives. Your pledge of $200, we send out to you a certificate to get another program, which is a great gift to give to someone. We're also going to send to you the Civil Rights Disc. We're also going to include in that a disc on science. Dr. Michio Kaku, who is at WBAI, is included in that. Native American Studies, Latino and Chicano Studies. We are in Southern California. I know that we can get more folks. We got about, what do we got here, about 12 minutes left. We got to get 10 more people to make that call at the $200 level. Folks, really, I have a lot of Chicano friends, having lived here in Southern California for so long. I know that you're out there. I work with you. I see you. I play with you. Call up and support your voice. Say, my history is on the airwaves now. You in Houston, you in New York City, you at KPFA in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Berkeley, all of you, we are calling upon you now to stand up for your history. How many times do you hear brown voices speaking about this particular history? We hear brown voices on the air in California here. You know, what are they talking about? I mean, are they going to play another reggaeton song? I mean, that's cool, too. But where are you hearing your history? Where are you hearing about the movements that made a difference? Pacifica, right here on the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Maybe you can make your reggaeton song, but just learn your history first so you have something to say.
That's exactly what I'm saying. 800-735-0230. That's the number to call. The phones are not ringing. Now we've got a couple of people on the line. We need to hear.
Small flurry. 1-800-735-0230. We're going to reward you with one more quick speech from that 1968 UMAS symposium with one of the great leaders from Colorado, Corky Gonzalez, who earned his street cred as a boxer, but he was also a part of the very first second President Kennedy campaign, and he was a supporter of Robert Kennedy as well. So he started moving into politics, but he had that street credibility that really attracted an element that normally was excluded. He was a person who spoke straight, and he was a great organizer. So let's get a few more phone calls in before we get to that clip, because we've only got 9 minutes to go, and then we're taking a pause on this Campus Campaign 2.0 for a few hours until we come back in 3 hours. But please, let's get to the phones right now. 1-800-735-0230. If we can get only two more phone calls, we'll get to this clip before we come back for a final message to you.
Let's do that. Two more of you. 800-735-0230. The lifeline to the Pacifica Radio Archives. An incredible, a library that is unparalleled in this country. People literally compare it to the greatest archives in this nation. That's what we have here. And this is because of you, listeners, because you have pledged your support to your local station. We have this archives. That's where this material comes from. Broadcasts from each of the Pacifica stations. We got one. There's one of them. One more person now making a call at 800-735-0230. The pledge is $200 of support. We will send out to you 90 hours of information. This is the catch. Once you pledge, We send it out to not just you, but to a school, a library, whichever learning institution that you would like to specify. We will do that. If you want to pledge at the $75 level, we will send out just this disc on Latino Chicano Studies. Better yet, do yourself a favor. Get the entire collection. Educate a child. Put that in a library and see the difference it can make in a young person's life. Have you heard some of your history? Should they hear theirs? That's all we're asking. 800-735-0230.
After having, as Risco just mentioned, having gone through the different processes of organization, working in the political world, being part of the capitalistic society and being in business and making money off of somebody else's sweat and blood and their problems, after having evaluated the entire system and the situation, you have to come to a screeching halt. Either you look yourself in the mirror and say, where am I going and what am I telling the people? Is it really and honestly, you know, the truth? Are you doing something to fill your pocketbook, or are you really telling the people that this is the way they should go? And I think that everybody involved in community action, everybody involved in politics, everybody involved in social action, all have this question in their mind. And some of them sell out. Some of them finally decide it's easier to live softly, live easily, take it easy, and finally be part of the society and be absorbed. I think that it's more important now than to mention all the statistics of our problems, that we don't have to tell a Mexicano what the problems are. We don't have to tell you about the little towns in Colorado or New Mexico or Texas where you're listed on the questionnaires, race, Mex, or where you're listed, or you live across the ditch, or across the tracks, or across the river. Whatever it is, you always live across, which means that there's always a boundary and a wall between you and the major society. Now, one of the things that you always hear different professional leaders or administration leaders tell you, your educators tell you, that the society is good, the society is there to be to make part in it, that everyone can make it. Now, what we really have to evaluate when we look at this thing is this society good? Is a society that creates barrios and ghettos, that creates discrimination and prejudice, that creates difference between people and creates attitudes, creates a police department that is only, really, the police department is only the reflection of the majority society. If it weren't, it couldn't exist under the using the methods that they use today. Now, we finally have to come to a decision. Have we been making mistakes? Have the older people, say, between the ages of 30 and 45 and 50, have they been leading the young people astray? Have they been selling us an empty bag? And we say, maybe we have. And many of us have been guilty. We go and we wander through a maze of what is the answer. You know, how do you make this bridge? Is it just money? Is it just economy? Is this the way we build ourselves up? And when we make that dough, that's the end, and that's the goal. And you and I both know it. Because if there is a Mexicano here who doesn't realize he has problems or his people has problems, then he's been completely and thoroughly brainwashed.
Well, those are the words of Corky Gonzalez, spoken 41 years ago, 1968, at the UMAS Symposium at UCLA, in March of 1968, which was attended by the great luminaries of the Chicano movement, helping empower students and youth and people of all ages into the value, the worth of the accomplishments that Latinos have made over the centuries here, even in the United States of America. So please, get to the phones. They are These are the phone lines that we need to get lit all the way to the top. We have 2 minutes to go. I'm joined by Interim Program Director Alan Minsky from here at KPFK Los Angeles. And together, we are going to get all of the lines lit from the five listening areas of Pacifica Radio. We want to get you, encourage you, to sponsor this incredible education pack, which we call the Campus Campaign 2.0, where 90 hours of materials will go to you as a gift and a duplicate copy to a school or university of your choice.
And included in this, there are 9 discs, each with about 10 hours of material, and including a Native American Studies, for those of you who are maybe tuned in today to hear American Indian Airwaves, and then a whole other disc on Latino Chicano Studies. That disc features an hour of From the Vault about Dolores Huerta, The Resistance of the Maya, another From the Vault installment, Flor del Pueblo, Music of Resistance in Latin America, Carlos Castaneda and Lila Downs. By the way, I do pronounce Spanish like Italian because I grew up partly in Italy. I apologize for that. The Delano Grape Strike, Cesar Chavez, La Raza Nueva with Montezuma Esparza, Sherry Moraga, Siqueiros, political artist, a great artist who has
one of the great muralists
and quite a history here in Los Angeles, contestation over at Siqueiros mural.
Okay, Alan, we're going to have to wrap up here. We have just a few seconds to go. I'd like to encourage the listeners of Campus Campaign 2.0 to return. We will be back in 3 hours to continue our programming, which will end Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific time and midnight East Coast time. So please keep the phone lines lit, 1-800-735-0230, and we continue on with the regular programming from each station.
Not had a chance to call? Be a part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign 2.0. Donate once and give twice. When you contribute to the archives today, we'll send a compilation of historic recordings from our archives to a school or college of your choice. Civil rights, U.S. history, arts and literature, the environment, Malcolm X, Noam Chomsky.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.